الناس والجنة علي حبه جنة قسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة علي حبه جنة قسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. And we were discussing about this topic based on the sermon number 147 in Nahjul Balagha, where Imam Ali alayhi salam in this sermon has mentioned certain aspects that we can consider when trying to understand this particular form or method of Islamic governance. And Imam Ali alayhi salam has also mentioned a few prophecies regarding the Islamic community, that is, what will face the Islamic community in the future, and what the community should do to be able to protect themselves from entering into those situations. One of those things that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions is that وَلَيْسَ عِنْدَ أَهْلِ ذَلِكَ الزَّمَانِ سِلْعَةٌ أَبْوَرَ مِنْ كِتَابِ مِنَ الْكِتَابِ إِذَا تُلِيَ حَقَّ تِلَاوَتِهِ. He says that, and there is nothing more undesirable, there is no commodity more undesirable than the book of God which is read in the right way. When there is nothing more undesirable than the book of God which is interpreted and understood in the correct and desirable, the correct way, the Islamic way. On the other hand, there is nothing more valuable, more, you can say, liked and desirable than the book of God which is interpolated. وَلَا أَنْفَقَ مِنْهُ إِذَا حُذْرِفَ عَنْ مَوَاضِعِهِ. When the book of God is interpolated, it is changed, it is misinterpreted, then it becomes very much desirable and liked by the community, by the people. That's how the situation will be in the future, according to Imam Ali alayhi salam.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, when we listen to these words, we feel sometimes that actually we are actually living those times now. And it is true. Today, the wrong interpretations of the Quran with the new hermeneutics that has come up in the postmodern world, we notice that the Quran and the Book of God, the books of God, are open to all sorts of interpretation. In fact, every reader becomes an interpreter in his own right. And now the interpretation of the Quran, while interpreting the Holy Quran, it becomes irrelevant to know what the author of the Quran actually wanted to say. What is important, according to them, is what the person understands. And this itself is a very huge trap which has been laid by these theologians and these scholars and these lexicographers and these you can say these exegetes of the Quran, they have all brought these types of ideologies and views out of being inspired from the Western movement of avoiding the books of God and the advancement of secularism. I can say this is a kind of an advanced form of secularism, whereby the books of God become completely something that is a plaything in the hands of whoever reads it. This is actually one of those things that can completely lead to irreligiosity, because now when the Quran and the books of God are open to all sorts of interpretation, and all interpretations are correct in their own right, that would mean that we don't have a reality that we are trying to follow, and all that exists is just our whims and desires and what we feel. And in fact, these are the things, these types of interpretations, these types of you can say views, are the ones that the materialistic people and the world loving people of the world are ready to give dollars, millions of dollars to spend, so that they can justify their lifestyle. I'm personally aware of certain institutes that are there in the Western world that carry this type of ideology, and I know that they are being supported by these conglomerates and these rich companies and these materialistic minded people. They are ready to spend millions of dollars for this type of ideology. And if you notice, Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha already mentions it, and he says that this type of interpretation of the Quran, where there is a lot of interpolation and change, is something that will be very desirable, and people will be ready to spend a lot of money behind it. May Allah protect us from that.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
There is another thing that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions as a prophecy, and says, وَلَا فِي الْبِلَادِ شَيْءٌ هُوَ أَنْكَرَ مِنَ الْمَعْرُوفِ. Another thing that he says is that in the cities there will be nothing more disliked, nothing more unknown, nothing more ignored than goodness, than what is correct, than good deeds. While on the other hand, he says, وَلَا أَعْرَفَ مِنَ الْمُنْكَرِ. And there will be nothing more known, nothing more attended to than the evil things, evil actions, evil thoughts, evil deeds. This is how the end of the times will be. And if you notice, you can actually witness this happening today, that adultery, drinking, alcohol, eating unlawful things, cheating, lying, tricking people, killing them, wars, all of these are given a very beautiful picture. These are the things that are correct, that are good, that are being propagated. While on the other hand, good deeds, when a person is trying to be good, they give him the stamp of being a fundamentalist. Now, this is something that is happening today. And of course, there are a lot of discussions that can be done regarding this, but we will suffice with this discussion that we had. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He helps us do good and stick to what is good and stay away from evil. And let us not try to justify what we have made as errors and mistakes, and instead be happy with what is correct and what is real. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله.
الفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids? That is, from the very beginning of the birth.
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, where we discuss problems, questions, and other relevant issues parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. Of course, all of the answers provided in this program are based upon the Holy Quran and the narrations of the Prophet and of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all. Joining us in the studio is our dear friend and guest speaker, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qom. Dear Sayyid, welcome and assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. So our topic today is a continuation of the previous session's topics about the etiquette of disciplining our children. We said that there were 25 rules to follow when we want to discipline our children, if I'm correct, Sayyid.
Yes.
And now we are at point number 17. Please enlighten us.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir ra'im rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa anjil faraja. So basically we were saying that if it comes to a point where a person or a parent or an educator wants to punish their kids, they have to follow at least 1, 2, 3 or all of these rules before they actually start the punishment system. So they need to keep these things in mind. So when we go to number 17, it is do not punish a child on something good that they do. Now, you might be wondering how so, right?
Right.
Sometimes you find out that the children, they come to their parents, they've done something themselves, and they, I don't know, for example, the girl went and washed the dishes, or the boy cleaned his room, right?
Right,
comes
right.
His parent happy and excited, and he's like, oh, I washed the dishes, I cleaned the room. And the parent says, no, you should have done that at the beginning. That's your job.
Right.
You're right?
Right.
So instead of him receiving compliment, instead of him being, I don't know, rewarded for his action, in fact, he's being punished for it.
Right, like you were supposed to do this from the start.
Yeah, and not just that, that's nothing. You should have done so and so and so and so.
Right, right.
So they just make it more, they add more to the child than elevate him. So what they do is first, they do not acknowledge that he done anything. That's the first thing they did. And two, they blame him. He gets blamed.
Right.
So that's a form of, let's call it mental punishment to the child.
Right, right.
So parents need to be very aware of that. Instead, if a child comes and says, I moved my, I don't know, my toy from the bed to the floor, from the floor to the box, they should be commended for it. You know, they should be rewarded for it. They should look highly at them. That's what the child needs. He needs encouragement. He needs to be...
Especially when they come on their own to tell that we've done this thing, right?
Exactly, exactly. So they take an initiative themselves because they feel proud themselves that they have accomplished something, even though in your point of view, in your eyes, it seems nothing. To him, it is something.
Of course.
So he's, you know, he says, I achieved something, and he comes happy to the parents, and then the parents...
Just slaps him in the face mentally.
Would end up punishing him. So we're saying, if you need to punish, make sure you're not punishing them for something they've done good, for a good behavior,
right,
for a good conduct. Even if it is in your eyes, in your understanding, it's a small thing.
And on that note, dear Said and dear listeners, we will take a quick break.
When I was born, the first words that I had heard were the words of Allah being whispered through my ear. And as I felt Allah's presence in my soul, that day Islam took me in its fold.
Welcome back to your listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are speaking about the 25 rules of etiquette to follow when we want to discipline our children in a productive manner. Dear Sayyid, please pick up where you left.
Okay, so we said that was number 17. Right. Do not punish a child based on the good behavior that he done.
Right.
Okay, we move to number 18. And number 18 is very critical, and it happens pretty much everywhere. You see that the father punishes, but the mother don't. Or vice versa. Right. The mother punishes, and the father doesn't.
Good cop, bad cop, basically.
Yeah. So what happened is that the child here, he lives in a very unbalanced life, in very unbalanced, household. Because, for example, in front of his father, he's not going to do anything wrong because he knows he's going to get punished.
Right.
But in front of his mom, he will do it because he knows his mom doesn't punish him.
And he will lash out even more because he was so restrained.
Exactly. Right? Or sometimes he does the opposite. In front of them, sometimes we have a lot of mothers who are very harsh with their kids. And the father's like, no, it's okay, let them do it, let them be, it's not a big deal. Now, it is between the parents themselves. When the child sees that the parents cannot agree on something themselves, he won't do the right thing himself.
Of course not.
So if you want to punish, you have to make sure that when it comes to you or your wife, you're both on the same page. Either you punish and the wife punishes too, or don't punish at all.
It's kind of like this thing that has become our mantra now. Like, there needs to be a balance.
Exactly. Exactly. So sometimes you hear the mother, for example, saying, you wait until that comes, I'm going to tell him.
Right.
Right?
They use the father to threaten the child.
Yeah. So I'm saying, but you could have punished him yourself. Why are you leaving it to the father? Which means you're telling him, if he's not here, you can do it, and I'll just tell your father.
Subconsciously, yeah.
Yeah. So subconsciously says, you know what? I can do it. My dad's not here. I can do it. But if he knows that the mother will punish him herself, the minute she does a mistake, he's not going to do it.
And not
whether
only
his
that,
father is there or right. not there.
But not only that, it also adds to how a relationship can be affected by this. Because if only the father punishes, the child will have a negative view towards his father. He'll see his father as the uncaring one, the brutal one, the authoritative figure, while the mother's loving and caring one.
Absolutely. And that's basically how we've been raised. When we were kids, we were looking at our parents as, I don't know, Hitler's dictators. To some, and you can see that trend even been portrayed in movies and cartoons.
Exactly.
Where kids don't like their dads because he's the one that constantly doing everything. And the mom says, let your dad come and he'll deal with it.
Right.
And then the poor father, he comes out of work, he's tired.
And stressed.
Obviously he's not in the right mood. If you remember one of the points that we says is that do not punish if you're tired, if you're exhausted, this or that, because you don't know what's going on.
Right.
And he comes and then the mother, she lashes out at him. She's like, did you see what he did?
This is your son. He's done so and so.
Yeah, so she even encourages him to do. Right? And then he feels obliged that he needs to do something about it. Otherwise, this woman is going to eat him alive.
Right?
So he feels obliged to, because, like, you know what? Come here, slap, slap, slap. Right? And then it works. Then, hell breaks loose, as we say. So we're saying that if you need to punish, as both parents, you need to be sure that both of you are on the same page.
Right.
And sometimes not even punishment. Sometimes even talking. Right? For sometimes he does something and the father wants to advise the child. He wants to talk to him. Just normal talk. And this is a common problem that we see today. Just normal talk. And sometimes maybe a little bit harsher, just depending on the situation that happened.
Right.
But you see the mom saying, no, don't leave him alone. It's not a big deal. What happened? Like, and you say to the mother, well, I'm trying to educate him. I'm trying to do it. Like,
right.
You're not right. And sometimes this happens in front of the child.
And that the child is disastrous.
And then he will not take both of them seriously.
Right. Horrible teamwork, if you ask me.
It is.
And on that note, we'll go on a quick break.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, a righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing the rules to follow when we want to discipline our children in a correct and proper manner. Dear Sayyid, please continue.
So we move on to number 19. So we're trying to go through them as much or as fast as we can.
Inshallah. Right?
Now, with number 19, is that we say there has to be a connection between the crime that's being committed and the punishment that will be fallen to them.
It's kind of a serious word, this crime.
Yeah, so there has to be a relationship between the two. There has to be a link between the two. For example, some parents will come and deprive their kids of, let's say, their monthly wages or their favorite game because they were acting, I don't know, bad in the school, for example.
Right.
Or because they have not done their homework and stuff like that.
Right.
Well, you see that we say al-jaza' min jins al-amal, that they do something that is not equivalent to the action itself. So for example, if it had to do something with money, for example, he spent and he wasted money.
Right.
I said to him, okay, I'm not going to give you money. So it, like, the punishment is from the same
it's
connected to the punishment. If, for example, if he watches too much TV and too much games, like, okay, I'm going to stop you from playing games. But don't use that to punish them for something that's not even related altogether.
Right.
So there has to be some sort of relationship between the crime and between the punishment that will come.
So it is also fair, right? It's all about being fair.
It is absolutely fair. So he understands the consequences of this particular action, that there are consequences from the same kind. For example, if he wastes money or he loses his money, he's like, okay, I'm not going to give you any more money.
Right.
And he needs money. So he learns from that. He loses his money and say, I'm going to take your PlayStation away from you. You're not teaching him anything.
Right.
About the value of money, for example. He's like, okay, so next time I lose it, it's okay, because I'm going to stop playing PlayStation for a day.
Right.
Or for an hour. Right. Not a big deal.
He doesn't understand the consequence.
Exactly, doesn't understand the consequence. But if you say to him, no, you lose your money, you waste your money, you buy something that's useless, we're not going to give it to you anymore. He feels the value of it.
And it is logical, so he can understand it just by thinking on his own, right?
Exactly. So we say there has to be a link between that a crime and that of a punishment.
Right.
And same thing, for example, if they do, I don't know, they break a toy, like, you're not going to give you, I'm not going to give you food, for example. I'm not going to give you ice cream.
Right.
Or deprive them of something. That's completely not related. If he breaks his toy, tell him I'm not going to buy you toys anymore.
Right.
Simple as that. I don't know, he breaks the TV, I'm not going to get you TV anymore. He destroys the laptop, I'm not going to get you a laptop anymore. There has to be some sort of link between the two. Otherwise, we're going to have a lot of problems. So if the parents, at least so far in this episode, we mentioned three types of rules that if the parents stick to, they might not find it necessary for them to even begin to punish their children, right? For example, if they haven't done something that actually is considered bad, like as we said in 17, or the parents themselves, like they don't collide with each other, the mother does his job, the father does his job, then the child will live in a very peaceful environment, and then he's like, okay, I don't need to do it wrong here because it doesn't make a difference whether my mom or dad did both the same when it comes to punishment. So, you know, they put the standard. Or when it comes to trying to punish as well, you have to make sure that it's related. If the parents stick to these, I don't know, at least these three, I'm thinking they will not need to resort to a lot of punishments.
Right. To say it, I must unfortunately end today's program. I thank you for your valuable input, and I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. As usual, if you have any questions, comments, or feedback regarding this program, you can, of course, contact us at our email, imageradio@irib.ir. You can also find us on our various social media accounts under the call handle of Call of Islam on Facebook, Instagram, or also on YouTube. Fi amanillah.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
In the limelight. Sharp cuts and methane from leaking gas drilling platforms and production sites could play a major role in the greenhouse gas emissions reductions necessary to fulfill the Paris Climate Agreement, and should be key aim of the COP26 United Nations climate talks, new research has suggested. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's environment correspondent Fiona Harvey. The piece is titled, Cutting Methane Should Be a Key COP26 Aim, Research suggests. Stay with us for more. Sharp cuts in methane from leaking gas drilling platforms and production sites could play a major role in the greenhouse gas emissions reductions necessary to fulfill the Paris Climate Agreement, and should be a key aim of the COP26 United Nations climate talks, new research has suggested. Cutting global emissions of methane by 40% by 2030 is achievable, with most cuts possible at low cost or even at a profit for companies such as oil and gas producers. It would make up for much of the shortfall in emissions reduction plans from national governments, according to the Energy Transitions Commission think tank. Ahead of COP26, senior United Nations and British officials have privately conceded that the top aim of the conference, for all countries to formulate plans called Nationally Determined Contributions, or NDCs, that would add up to a global 45% cut in emissions by 2030 will not be met. However, Britain, as host of the summit to be held in Glasgow in November, still hopes for enough progress to show that the world can still limit global heating to 1.5 degrees Celsius, the aspiration of the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. Methane is a powerful greenhouse gas, about 80 times more potent than carbon dioxide in warming the planet. It is the biggest component of natural gas used for fuel, and leaks can be caused by poorly constructed conventional drilling operations, shale gas wells, gas pipelines, and other fossil fuel infrastructure. Methane is also flared from some oil production sites. Staunching such leaks or capturing the methane instead can be done at a low cost and can even be profitable for gas producers, especially now that the international gas price has soared. Just a few key producers, Russia, the United States, China, and Canada, could make a massive impact. Adair Turner, chairman of the Energy Transitions Commission think tank, ETC, said, "It is clear that if you add up the nationally determined contributions, they're not big enough to keep us to 1.5 degrees Celsius, above pre-industrial levels. There is a huge gap left. But there are some actions that you can imagine groups of countries taking that could close that gap." The United States and the European Union recently announced a partnership aiming at reducing methane emissions by 30% by 2030. But Adair Turner said more could be achieved, and this would help to compensate for the relatively unambitious nationally determined contributions that many countries have. "We have not focused enough on methane, but it can be a really important lever, and cutting it has an impact on global heating sooner rather than later, which matters if there are feedback loops in the climate system," he added. Adair Turner also pointed to other key actions that could take place at the COP26 conference, which he said would substantially help global efforts to tackle the climate crisis. For instance, helping developing countries to phase out their existing coal-fired power stations was one key way of reducing reliance on coal. In India, for instance, new coal-fired power stations are now more expensive than renewable alternatives, yet the marginal cost of electricity generation from existing coal-fired power stations is still cheaper than wind power or solar power. That means companies have an incentive to keep old coal-fired power plants going, but if they could be paid to phase out the oldest, that would accelerate the country's move away from coal. "Developing countries need financial support to do this," Adair Turner added. Steel could be another focus, according to Turner. Steel companies could move to green steel production using hydrogen far more easily than a few years ago, he said. A global agreement among steel producers at COP26 in Glasgow could achieve that, and similar global agreements were possible among cement producers, the shipping industry, and other high-carbon sectors. Many countries, Adair Turner added, were submitting their nationally determined contributions that were too cautious and did not reflect how fast businesses were already cutting emissions and moving to green energy and clean technology. "Nationally determined contributions have not caught up with what is possible and what is actually happening," he said. Emissions of the powerful greenhouse gas methane have surged in the past 15 years, threatening to thwart global attempts to combat climate change. Scientists have been surprised by the surge in methane emissions, which began in 2007 and then was boosted even further in 2014 and 2015. Concentrations of methane in the atmosphere over those 2 years alone rose by more than 20 parts per billion, bringing the total to 1,830 parts per billion. This is a cause for alarm among global warming scientists, because emissions of the gas warm the planet by more than 20 times as much as similar volumes of carbon dioxide.
Wow.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We said when corruption happens, it will affect the rights of people, which is what we call human rights. The negative impacts of corruption, especially when we are looking at it from a political level, it is devastating on the people who inhabit the land or the citizens of the world in general. So when corruption happens, it will legitimize, or at least we can say, the democratic and political system. It will become eroded. It will become, how should I say the word? It will become very weak, where people don't have faith anymore in this democratic system, right? Or in this political system. Because it slowly, slowly starts to decay. It's like a teeth. If it's not brushed, if it's not maintained and taken care of, or being taken care of, it will obviously decay, and soon enough the person will feel the pain in his gums, and the pain will be severe. Same thing when it comes to countries or systems, I should say, where there's a sense of corruption, where democracy itself gets eroded, and erosion happens and it gets rusted, then people will lose faith, and then slowly, slowly, it might turn into, I don't know, instead of being a democratic, it will turn to a dictatorship, where one person, the president or the government that rules, they rule with an iron fist, as you can see in many countries, in China and Korea and North Korea, and you know, a lot of the Arabic world, where the kings and the rulers, they're ruthless, because democracy goes out of the door. They acclaim to be democratic, they acclaim to be democratic, they speak about human rights. For example, funny enough, this is not a joke, that Saudi Arabia, they consider to be champions of human rights, and they defend human rights, and they sign the Treaty of Human Rights, where they themselves, they behead their own citizens if they speak against the government, as we've seen with so many clerics and so many people who were beheaded recently because they decided to raise their voice against the corruption that was happening in their own countries. So corruption will definitely, if it is on a political level, affect the rights of people when it comes to their democratic rights and speaking of their minds and raising their concerns. Also corruption, it will make people lose respect for their democracy itself and for the system itself and for the people that run the system. Sometimes you go to a lot of countries, you see that the citizens of this country, they have immense love for the rulers, for the kings or presidents or who or what have you. They respect them. Why? Because they say, well, these people, kind, generous to us, they gave us everything that we require as citizens, we've been at least, let's say, honored and taken care of, and so on and so forth. But other countries you go to, they curse their system, they curse their presidents, they curse their kings and whoever is in power. Why? Because there is corruption, and those people, instead of trying to help their citizens, they're actually going against them.
they, you know, hurting them more. So, for example, if you look at Iraq and the regime of the former Saddam Hussein, you see how much people hated that guy and how much people curse him on a daily basis. Until today, he left a legacy of cursing because of the corruption that he left on people. So people will lose that kind of respect for the citizen, which is not something that we should have in a society, because we need to have a society that's strong and that is together. Let us take a break and then we continue after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to For Humanity. Corruption contributes to disrupting economical, social, and political reform and reform efforts, obviously. If the government is corrupted, if there are corruption on a governmental level or political level, in society, we have a lot of needs. For example, let's give you this example so we can make this point clear, that in our area, for example, we need streets to be paved, we need asphalt to be laid, we need bridges, we need better infrastructure of our cities, of our suburbs, or the places that we live in. These projects, obviously, they need the support, or they have to be done by the government themselves, and the government have to provide the funds for it. But then that does not happen. Where the government, even it might give money, the government might allocate amount of money, but those who are in power abuse it and take it for themselves. I remember in some countries, which I don't like to mention, for example, the government of a certain city, they get billions of dollars on a yearly basis, like as a budget for this city alone. And the governor of that city himself, he would have to give money to other companies, for example, to come and reconstruct the city itself, or build streets, build roads, build infrastructure and pipelines and so on and so forth. So they would get either, sometimes this happens as well, they either get an imaginary company that does not exist in reality, it's got a website and stuff, but does not exist, and they say, well, we gave the money to these guys, and these guys just fled away, and they did not do a good job. That could happen, which I know that it happened in many cases. And sometimes, no, they do bring someone to, for example, to build the roads, but they do such a bad job that the road itself, the asphalt becomes dust within a matter of months. And you can see the level of corruption happening there. So when this happens, it deprives people of their rights, it deprives people of their infrastructure that they should have, and it weakens it completely. So there will be no more reform, because we constantly need reform on an individual level, on organization level, on every level in society. There has to be constant reform for the better in building, reconstructing, trying to make things easier for people. I can't be living in the 21st century and yet I still have roads that have holes the size of a black hole, for example. Or buildings are still old and we still don't have tap water, for example, in a lot of cases. That should not be happening. If this is happening and if we're still living in such systems, then be sure that the system that you live in is absolutely corrupted. That system that you live in is taking your rights, because they're not leaving a gap. They're not giving time or a chance for reform to happen. So when corruption happens, reform goes out of the door. We'll leave it up to here, and inshallah we will continue in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صل يا ربي على طه الأمين رحمة أرسلته للعالمين.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The crisis in Haiti following problematic elections, natural disasters, and a presidential assassination in July is really at its roots a failure of U.S. foreign policy. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jeff Abbott, journalist. This article is published under the heading Expulsion of Migrants in Texas Highlights Decades of Failed U.S. Foreign Policy Toward Haiti. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Just days before President Joe Biden addressed the United Nations General Assembly, declaring his commitment to protecting human rights and dignity, the news was filled with images of U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents on horseback whipping migrants in Del Rio, Texas. The United States carried out more than 44 expulsion flights to Haiti in 1 week. At the time of publication, the expulsion flights are continuing. But despite the United States' heavy-handed response to Haitian migrants at the U.S. border, Haitians and other migrants continue to stream north. Despite the changes in administrations, U.S. policy in Haiti has not changed in decades. The support of democracy has rung hollow, with the United States pushing through their candidates and civil society being largely left behind. Among those now en route to the United States is Ernest, a 34-year-old Haitian, who asked that we not use his last name. In mid-August, he left Santiago, Chile, where he has lived since 2015 with his wife and daughter. 2 months later, the family arrived in Tapachula, Mexico, joining an estimated 30,000 Haitians seeking to reach the United States. Ernest tells The Progressive in a phone call from Tapachula, "The majority of people come from either Haiti, Brazil, or Chile, but getting to the United States is very difficult. Tens of thousands of other Haitians continue to travel through the region seeking refuge. On September 26th, Guatemalan national police agents and immigration officials detained 75 Haitian and Cuban migrants in eastern part of the country. The migrants were expelled to Honduras. Like many other Haitian migrants, Ernest initially left his homeland in search of jobs in Brazil and Chile. He says, "There is no work in Haiti. How can someone live in Haiti where there is no work?" But he never found the opportunity he needed in Chile, partially due to the difficulty of obtaining legal documents to work. Added to this, the racism against Haitians was constant, he says. So in August, Ernest made the decision to try reaching the United States. He tells The Progressive, "I was only working to eat, and one cannot live like that. Without papers, you cannot do anything." The route to the United States for Haitians is a long one, often starting in Brazil or Chile. In total, it is an estimated 7,000-mile-long trek fraught with dangers such as the Darien Gap, an area with no roads where migrants either walk through the dangerous jungle or travel via water crossing between Colombia and Panama. Despite the risks and the Biden administration's massive expulsion of Haitians at the southern border, Ernest still hopes to reach the United States. He says, "The United States has a better life. I want to be in this country. I do not want to be there illegally, but I want to be there." But Mexican authorities have intensified their efforts to stop migration, and the options for crossing that do exist, including taxis, can cost thousands of dollars. Work in southern Mexico remains extremely limited, despite plans by Mexican President Andrés Manuel López to create jobs in the country's southern states. Following the massive expulsion of Haitians, the United States Special Envoy to Haiti, Daniel Foote, issued his resignation. In his two-page letter resignation, Foote decried the deportations and the lack of support from the U.S. Department of the State. "I will not be associated with the United States' inhumane, counterproductive decision to deport thousands of Haitian refugees and illegal immigrants to Haiti, a country where American officials are confined to secure compounds because of the danger posed by armed gangs and the control of daily life," Foote wrote in his resignation letter. He added, "Our policy approach to Haiti remains deeply flawed, and my recommendations have been ignored and dismissed when not edited to project a narrative different from my own." Reuters reports that State Department spokesperson Ned Price called Foote's resignation unfortunate before placing the policy failure on the former special envoy, who had only been appointed in July following the assassination of Haiti's president. But the crisis in Haiti following the problematic elections, natural disasters, and a presidential assassination in July is really at its roots a failure of U.S. foreign policy. Despite the changes in administrations, U.S. policy in Haiti has not changed in decades. The support of democracy has rung hollow, with the United States pushing through their candidates and civil society being largely left behind, as Foote identified in his statement. The hobby that makes us believe we should pick the winner again is impressive, Foot wrote, adding, this cycle of international political interventions in Haiti has consistently produced catastrophic results. Migration crisis can be expected to recur as long as the United States keeps supporting, very heavy-handedly, trying to choose who should lead Haiti. These corrupt and undemocratic leaders, Steve Forrester, a lawyer and Haitian immigration advocate with a U.S.-based Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, tells The Progressive. We virtually installed Martelly in 2011. We supported Moa and Foot's resignation letter, as he made clear is about a faith policy that doesn't support civil society, unquote. The situation in Haiti remains dire. Lack of opportunity, crime, poverty, and corruption continue to push migrants to leave. The structural racism all too often continues in South American countries where many have sought a better life. But at the root of the problem is the continuation of a failed U.S. policy in Haiti. And the massive expulsion of thousands of Haitians from the border highlights this failure. Ernest says, it hurts my heart every day. The United States says it is a friend of Haiti, but when it does these things, it makes me think it isn't a friend but an enemy. He adds, the problem of my country is the problem of the United States. The United States only uses the smaller countries. When Haitians cannot live in their country, it is the fault of the United States of America. Ernest pauses, then finally says, it is extremely complicated for Haitians.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, boys and girls, and other life forms, welcome to today's episode of Youth Station.
Choo choo kachoo, it's the Youth Station for you.
You know what? I actually missed that.
You did.
A little slide, you know, get this just this once. Thank you so very much for joining us. It's been a minute since you've had us both in the studio. I am Zainab and...
I am Muzaffar.
So, yeah, how's life been, bro?
It's been good. It's been good. Just been very, very, very busy.
Very busy.
Life is busy for everyone nowadays, isn't it? You just can't find any time to just sit down and contemplate and think about life.
True.
Which it's great that I'm here, actually. What? Youth Station is the place, because while the train of thought is rolling on, you can just, you know, gaze out of the window and think.
Right.
Opportunity, sister.
It is true. Life is hectic. And especially during a certain age, I feel that a lot keeps happening all the time. And I think it's during these situations that we come to a better understanding of how much God helps us. And I think it's during these times that we come to a better understanding of how much Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has our back.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to go through difficulties and trials and tests and tribulations before you realize just how much Allah is helping you.
Yeah, exactly. And but
there's always a but. Yeah.
There's always a but. There's a fine line between Allah helping you out. Are you expecting Allah to help you because He's God and it's like sort of His job to help you? You're His helpless, feeble little creation.
We're pathetic.
We're pathetic,
yeah.
You know, compared to the majesty of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And then there's times that you downright expect a miracle from Him.
Mm-hmm. Is there another but coming or?
No, that's it.
Okay.
You know, when is it that we can expect divine aid, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question, actually. Can you expect it all the time?
Exactly.
Or can you only expect it sometimes?
Mm.
Or? Well, let's go first to the verse of the Quran. Ya ayyuha